LabCorp Perspectives Oncology, where we connect on cancer, science, and patient care. I'm your host, Dr. Rebecca Previs, and I'm a GYN oncologist and senior medical director at LabCorp Oncology. Today, I'm joined by gynecologic pathologist, Dr. Tricia Newman, who's also the assistant professor of pathology at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center and the director of the Women's Health Initiative, as well as my colleague, Dr. Kyle Strickland, who is an anatomic and molecular pathologist, as well as a director of medical affairs here at LabCorp. And today I'm so excited to be talking about a study that these two just presented at the 2026 annual meeting of the United States and Canada Academy of Pathology, or USCAP, which is a little easier to say, in San Antonio, Texas. Their study asks a deceptively simple question. Does nuclear grading for endometrial cancer tell us something meaningful in the era of molecular classification? So, Trish, thanks so much for being here along with you and Kyle. We're so excited.
Happy to be here.
It's a pleasure.
So, Trisha, before we dive in, let's just start about what motivated this project.
Well, the motivation really came from, I've worked at a few different institutions now, and I've noticed the variability in nuclear grading across pathologists in different institutions. And I thought, how is this affecting grading of endometrial carcinomas? Is this really having an impact? And how do we measure this? Now we have the TCGA classification for molecular classification of endometrial endometrioid carcinomas. So we have our no specific molecular profile, POLE, our MMR deficient tumors, and TP53 mutated. And the question really is, how does nuclear grade, does it mirror that molecular classification, or is it something independent of that molecular classification? And do we really need it?
So Tricia, you think about this every day from a practicing pathologist perspective. You look at, I'm guessing, hundreds of uterine tumors every year. Help us understand for our listeners, why is nuclear grade so important? And in fact, maybe even take a step back. How do you actually grade an endometrial tumor?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I'm sitting at the microscope looking at an endometrioid carcinoma, and again, this is strictly for endometrioid carcinomas. So when I'm looking at those tumors, the grading system is really heavily reliant on architecture. And then a secondary feature is nuclear grade. So architecture is composed of, if you want to increase the grade, it's really reliant on solid architecture, not just the glandular architecture of the endometrioid carcinoma. So solid non-squamous, that's an important key part, is non-squamous morphology. And it has to be, for grade one, it should be less than or equal to 5%. For grade two, solid architecture is 6 to 50%. And then grade three is anything over 50%. And then the nuclear grade, again, is secondary. So if you see severe nuclear atypia in the majority of the tumor, then you can bump that grade by one. So let's say you have a grade one tumor by architecture, but you're seeing grade three nuclear atypia in the majority of the tumor, you can then bump it to a grade two. And it's a really uncommon scenario. And a lot of times, unless I'm seeing really severe nuclear atypia in the majority of the tumor, I don't bump that case. But I notice there's variability in that. And what I might call moderate atypia, some people consider severe. And then they would bump that case by a grade two, let's say grade two. And I think that, now in the molecular classification era that we know, that we have TP53 tumors, POLE, MMR deficient cases, I think where it really comes into play is for the no specific molecular profile cases. And should we really be bumping those cases? And I think it's really important for that grade two to three, because grade one and two are considered low grade and grade three are considered high grade. And that patient gets put on a course for different treatment. So if you have a no specific molecular profile, it has some solid architecture, and one pathologist looks at it and they might see moderate atypia, and another pathologist looks at it and they see severe atypia, that case might get bumped into the grade three, depending on what pathologist looks at that case. So I think this really becomes important, again, for that no specific molecular profile category. And, some of these nuclear grading studies, inter-observer studies, haven't been done since the 1990s or so. And, you know, we've learned so much about endometrioid carcinoma since then, and the molecular classification, you know, does that really, should this really be impacting our grade? Or should we really be relying heavily on the architecture, which we know does correlate with prognosis, and then maybe incorporating the molecular profile as well? So, you know, there aren't great definitions in, or there's not really a whole lot of guidance actually in some of the literature, and how we assess for mild, moderate, and severe atypia. So several goals. The first is, what is the inter-observer reproducibility? Can we assess the nuclear atypia, and does this correlate with the molecular findings? And the third is, can we use those, if we do find a correlation, can we use those morphologic features to help guide us into the molecular classification as well?
I think that makes so much sense and is perfect background for, you know, you were being the brainchild of how this study was designed. Maybe we'll tackle, you know, what were you thinking when you were designing this cohort?
I knew that just looking at the morphology and trying to get pathologists, GYN-trained pathologists, to look at these cases, we really need that molecular background for these cases. And that's where Kyle comes into play, and LabCorp, really, because I knew partnering with them, we would have the molecular information for the cases. And so what we did is we looked at 160 or so of just consecutively collected cases, and we were each blinded to the molecular profile, and we did this independently. So we looked at the cases and divided, you know, our categories again into mild, moderate, and severe atypia. And this was independent of architecture. So we were really just looking at the nuclear features. And we said, can we assess the atypia again independently? And we had some really interesting findings. So I think I'm going to let Kyle kind of dive into some of the molecular findings here.
Yeah, Kyle, this is a perfect segue. I know that we rely on you for all things molecular. Tell us about the data that you were working with on the LabCorp side.
Each of these endometrial adenocarcinomas underwent comprehensive molecular profiling using LabCorp's flagship NGS next-generation sequencing test called OmniSeq Insight. So this is a 523 gene panel. It looks for SNVs, insertions and deletions, as well as copy number variants, including losses and gains in a subset of genes. It includes an MSI assessment, so that's microsatellite instability, and that's important for determining that microsatellite high category of endometrial carcinomas. It also looks at TMB, and then it also looks for fusions using RNA sequencing. So we used all of that data to assign each tumor a molecular subtype according to that TCGA category, and we did that in a stepwise fashion. So MSI first, that's very easy to identify. Then we looked at POLE-E, and there are some features, particularly specific mutations and variants in POLE-E that are associated with this hypermutation, ultramutation phenotype, and that's also associated with a high TMB. So our test was uniquely designed to capture that and assess that. And then we looked for TP53 alterations to assign them to that category. And why did we do it that way? Well, the TP53 can be altered in POLE-E and MSI-high tumors as well, but usually that's in the context of a very heterogeneous tumor just spitting out mutations in all different ways. So the MSI-high and the POLE-E, they have high tumor mutational burden. The TP53, they usually have copy number amplifications along with this TP53 category. And then we used those to sort of, by exclusion, categorize tumors as those with no specific mutational profile or what were called copy number low in the TCGA.
So I know you guys both always have your microscopes nearby. So let's get under the microscope. Trish, what did you actually see in this study?
Well, the majority of the cases were, you know, not surprisingly, just what I would classify as mild, you know, atypia, I didn't find very many significant cases, but with significant atypia. But, you know, it was interesting that, you know, the no specific molecular profile cases were overwhelmingly low-grade, bland nuclei, which is, again, is not surprising. The MMR cases, those had a wide morphologic spectrum, And then the TP53 altered cases, those pretty consistently had a high grade or significant atypia in those. So it was interesting that, you know, we are seeing that under the microscope. And, you know, for those of us who, you know, sign out clinical cases, it's not very surprising because we know that, you know, serous carcinomas are TP53 altered. A high percentage of those cases are TP53 altered, and there are certain morphologic features that we see there with that really prominent nucleoli, and that's sort of the features that we were seeing in endometrioid too that are TP53 altered. So it was nice to sort of see that correlation of, you know, TP53 altered, and yes, we are picking it up under the microscope.
So you mentioned not being surprised by those findings. It kind of affirmed what you were seeing in clinical practice. But the thing I love about science and kind of doing deep dives in these types of projects is sometimes we find unexpected results. Was there anything that surprised you from this study?
I guess how Kyle and I, even though we independently looked at the cases, we had a correlation. You know, we both picked up on it. So, you know, maybe if we can define the nuclear grading a little bit more and, you know, tell other pathologists what to look out for these TP53 altered, maybe we can redefine the criteria for nuclear grading and help.
And, you know, I'll just add something there. What surprised me about this study, you know, when we talk about nuclear grading, that it goes from the low, which are like, you know, super small circles, to the really bizarre, you know, and what we call the high grade atypia. They can take on all sorts of shapes and multinucleation and whatnot. But what we found was that, you know, even within like smaller, more rounded nuclei, some of them had like clear chromatin, some of them had other features. You know, it makes me think that like in today's day and age, we might be able to use AI or something, some other visualization techniques to help us stratify even further and maybe go beyond just this three-tiering score. But of course, that's a future work. And I agree with what Tricia was saying, like the way that these stratified according to the molecular subtypes was actually pretty pretty satisfying, but also surprising.
That's really interesting, Kyle. I know you guys both spent a lot of time with these tumors and, you know, independently reviewed them as Trish had mentioned. Maybe walk us through kind of the more granular data and what you saw in the numbers molecularly.
So statistically, like I said, it was quite strong and consistent. Those with no specific mutational profile, they were significantly enriched for those small circular grade one nuclei. In contrast, the TP53 mutated tumors, they were overrepresented in the higher nuclear grades and accounted for 100% of those grade three really bizarre looking nuclei cases. Interestingly, the age, tumor mutational burden, and the percentage of unstable microsatellite sites, they didn't really differ significantly across the nuclear grades so much.
And I have to ask, because I know this is something as a field that we're constantly talking about. We talk about it almost every day as well, and that's POLE. What did you see in those mutated tumors?
Well, there were really too few cases to draw conclusions from. Our sample size was only 4 POLE mutated tumors. Some showed grade 2 nuclei, but none showed grade 3. We know that these tumors display high-grade morphologic characteristics. These tumors are very heterogeneous. They have multiple subclonal populations arising from the ultra mutations produced by that POLE enzyme and those variants. It really has its proofreading ability removed. And so that's what's causing that ultra mutated phenotype. And we know that high grade cancers are there. We see them under the microscope. And the whole thing about POLE mutated tumors is that those tumors go on to have really, really good outcomes despite how they look bad under the microscope. So I would expect to see at least a few cases with maybe focal or even more diffuse nuclear atypia that would correspond to those TP53 mutated clones in certain contexts. And while we didn't observe it here, I bet it comes out of larger data sets in at least a small subset of cases.
So this is very academically interesting and I think impacts clinical practice maybe down the line, as you said, but what would a practicing pathologist who, like you, Trish, is looking at these uterine tumors every day, what should a practicing pathologist take away from this?
We do have guidelines for ancillary testing, of course, and we should be staining all of these cases with MMR, IHC, and TP53, and some of the higher stage tumors should be getting ERPR as well. But, you know, I think it's just it reassures sort of your clinical impression when you're looking under the microscope to say, you know, like, I recognize this morphology. It looks like a TP53 altered case, like Kyle mentioned, some of those bizarre nuclei or some of those with really prominent nucleoli that we see, and they might even have some smaller cells but really prominent nucleoli. So I think there's this spectrum of TP53 alterations that we're seeing under the microscope, and that should really tip off your pathologist to say, this is likely a TP53 altered case. Even if labs are not routinely staining for TP53, maybe that's a case that they really want to pursue, so that way they can give that information to the clinical side. I think it's very interesting, and I wonder how this will impact clinical management, if at all. But, you know, our next steps are to expand this.
What about you, Kyle? In practice, I know you think a lot about morphologic features. What's your perspective on this?
My perspective is the same as Trisha's. I think that this is going to be used as a sanity check. You know, when we look at those cases, we know that TP53 mutated cancers in general, they usually are a little bit more aggressive. And I think that that's true for the endometrioid tumors as well. So if you were to see some high-grade atypia, you know, that might lean you away from thinking of this as one of the cases that have no specific mutational profile, thinking more about MSI high or, you know, even POLE, but especially P53. And so that might trigger you to order some IHC or look more carefully at the case, maybe consider, you know, trying to definitively exclude a serous carcinoma, especially if there are some solid components. You may be thinking about like a mixed mutational profile. That's how I would think of it, just as a sanity check.
So with any study, you know, we always think about the inherent limitations. How are you thinking about scaling this study, and what are your plans for kind of moving this data forward?
Well, it's great that Kyle and I had a great correlation when we looked at the cases for nuclear grade. But of course, we need to expand this. You know, is this something that's really reproducible with other gynecologic pathologists, and not just in the United States, but also internationally? What are our international colleagues doing? And so the next step is to take this to, you know, several gynecologic pathologists, both national and international, and say, are we really all seeing the same thing? Do we all assess nuclear grade the same? And so we're going to do this in a larger inter-observer reproducibility study, again, both national and international. And I'm really excited to see the results of that.
And what are you thinking, Kyle, as far as next steps?
When I think about grading in practice, it's very subjective. It's dependent upon the pathologist's eyeballs, really, right? And how we've been trained. And so I think that this study, if we can use this as sort of the basis and help define those nuclear grading criteria, like Trisha said, I think we'll have more consistent nuclear grading across all of our practices. And, you know, longer term, like I was mentioning, integrating some digital pathology, maybe some AI and some quantitative imaging tools, that may allow us to get even more granular and to find some associations that we haven't really seen in the past.
And I think this study really nicely enforces what I know to be true as a GYN oncologist, that morphology still matters, even in this molecular era where there's so much emphasis on that as a prognostic indicator for a patient's overall outcomes. You know, nuclear grade isn't just something that you learn in textbooks in medical school and, you know, read on your pathology reports. It actually reflects what it sounds like, that underlying tumor biology. Trish, would love to turn it over to you for any other final thoughts today.
I think that's a great point is, you know, it all starts with the pathologist. So what are they seeing under the microscope? How are they going to push this case? Are they going to push it towards more molecular testing, more ancillary testing? And again, it all starts with the morphology. So I 100% agree.
Kyle, any wisdom from this study for our listeners?
Oh, no, I just want to echo exactly what Trisha said. The morphology comes from those molecular alterations. We think of cancer as a disease of genomics, but it's also playing a part with, you know, the transcriptional programming and the epigenomics of certain cancer types. So I'm excited to see how all of this pans out, combining, you know, the multi-omics molecular approaches with morphology and even with artificial intelligence and machine learning algorithms. I think it's going to bring in a golden age of pathology myself.
Thank you so much, both to you, Trish and Kyle, for walking us through this really important study. Congratulations on your presentation at USCAP. I'd like to thank our listeners for joining us on this episode of LabCorp Perspectives Oncology. We'll see you next time.